I'd like to call the Transportation Finance Division Committee to order. We do not have a quorum. As soon as we have a quorum, we'll take the business if we need. First, and Magnus, do you want to start explaining? Before Representative Magnus starts, when we have a quorum, I will announce it again. We will definitely adjourn before 11:15. So I think we can handle everything that's coming through. We may not have opportunity for too much questions, but we'll definitely get through the bill. Representative Magnus, do you want to just start the testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure, does everyone have this, fiscal information from Ms. Seward in the packets?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to make sure everyone has that. Mr. Chairman and members, this is the Governor's Supplemental Budget Bill for Transportation. I have with me Kevin Gray. Are you the CEO?
Excuse me, we do have a quorum.
Yeah.
So. Representative Doty will move the minutes of March 13th.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Minutes have been moved. Any questions? Comments? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? The minutes are approved. Representative Magnus, excuse me. Now you can keep going.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, House File 3964 is the Governor's Supplemental Budget Bill for Transportation. And with me this morning, I have Mr. Kevin Gray, the CFO of MnDOT, to help walk through the bill and explain some of the financial implications. And I just as soon turn it over to him right away.
Oops. Chair, Leader, and members, my name is Kevin Gray, Chief Financial Officer for MnDOT, and I'm testifying to House File number 3964 regarding the Governor's Supplemental Budget Bill. And the impacts that I'm going to highlight are the transportation tax to MnDOT that have an impact on it. I think for ease of discussion, we'll go through the worksheet that was prepared by Ms. Seward and just talk to the point from there. There are primarily three areas that are impacted in the Governor's Supplemental Budget Bill of impacts to MnDOT. The first is in our multimodal program, specifically Greater Minnesota Transit. The Governor is proposing, consistent with his proposal on, I believe, most of the general funded agencies, a reduction in grants to our Greater Minnesota Transit program of 4%. That 4% total is approximately $750,000 per year, beginning in fiscal 9 and continuing as a base adjustment through 10 and 11 and beyond. There's a one-time funding reduction totaling $1.7 million.
Mr. Gray, excuse me, please. Back on the rural transit item or any of them, is there an assumption that the bill that was passed, now that you're getting into those monies using those monies, because the Lights On bill doesn't provide this much money, did it, in some of these items?
Chair Leader, that's correct. The Lights On bill from last year, the one-time funding reduction of $1.7 million is consistent with the amount that was provided in the House File 2800 bill. And that represented an amount that would have allowed Greater Minnesota Transit Service to stay at a static level, and it represented essentially a bridge amount that was required because of the MBES phase-in. As you know, Greater Minnesota Transit receives funding from the general fund as well as from an MBES transit account or fund, if you will. And in the Lights On bill last year, the timing of the phase-in was different than the governor's recommendation. And in the governor's recommendation, it would have had a more accelerated pace of the funding coming to Greater Minnesota Transit. This $1.7 million essentially was to bridge the gap between the governor's recommendation that was not adopted last year and the current MVEST schedule. So it was a one-time request to maintain service levels. The reduction in grants by 4% is, again, the governor's ongoing attempt to balance the general fund deficit and is consistent with other agencies. So we have two pieces here that impact Greater Minnesota Transit, $2.4 million in total for fiscal 09, and then an ongoing adjustment of $750,000. There is a relatively more modest piece, the sales tax rate reduction, which effectively that's the impact of that is to reduce sales taxes by an eighth of a percent, consistent with, I think, other proposals on the sales tax side made by the governor. So the program impact for 2009 is $2.4 million. And for 10 and 11, it's $750,000 growing to $101.1 million on an ongoing basis. The challenge for our Greater Minnesota Transit Program, obviously, is in fiscal 9, because in 10 and 11 and beyond, there are two factors that help with our challenge to deliver service. One is the constitutional amendment of the MVEST phase in, which increases in those years. And two, of course, with the House File 2800, there are additional revenues that come in, I believe, starting in 11 for the sales tax on leased vehicles. So the challenge for us is in fiscal 2009, primarily related to the differences in the phase and time in. So the $1.7 million is what we're working with right now to look at the impacts on service. But there will be some adjustments to service levels in the balance of calendar 08 and into 09 uninformed. We have Mr. Tom Gottfried of our transit office here if you'd like to hear more about the service level impacts. But I think it's in the tens of thousands of hours that we would have to make an adjustment for that.
Mr. Gray, do you want to bring Mr. Gottfried with the items, or do you want to continue straight through first?
If it's with your indulgence, I think maybe it'd be good to wrap up the Greater Minnesota Transit discussion right now while we're on that topic, and then we'll look at the rest of the items and talk to the committee through it at that point after that.
That, I think, would be best, right. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Chairman Lehner and members. We're anticipating that the governor. I have Tom Gottfried with the Minnesota Department of Transportation Office of Transit. We're anticipating the adjustment of the governor's proposal to impact the transit system roughly about 10,000 hours in calendar year 2008 and another 40,000 hours in calendar year 2009. That would be the impact for the years that we're doing it. We operate a grant program. The grant programs are on a calendar year basis, so it has that fiscal impact and it kind of phases over a period of time. So that's roughly about what we're looking at, roughly about a total 50,000 hours of service potential loss.
Mr. Gottfried, how do you distribute that loss among the, what do you have, 80 counties? Or how many counties have it now?
Greater Minnesota, Chairman Leader, Greater Minnesota is involves everything outside of the 7-county metropolitan area, which is the 80 counties. Currently, our tradition and our, because we have expanded dollars as well as when we have contracting dollars, we spread the loss across the board. We don't target any specific project or system. We would take that on a percentage. That works out to be roughly about a 5% reduction in services.
Mr. Gottfried, basically, it's not capital, it's services, basically. Is the capital is federal money, correct?
Correct.
Pretty much?
Correct.
Representative Horn, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Gottfried, you know, we have a lot of statistics in terms of hours of service reduction and the actual allocation. But what I'm interested in is how is this going to affect people on a day-to-day basis? Who is not going to get service? Where will that service not happen? What, you know, we talk about the impact on individual lives here. What, how can you help us understand that a little bit?
Mr. Zachary?
Chairman, representing Hornstein, generally what would happen when a service reduction of this sort happens, the transit systems would look at their total services and do services on the margin. Obviously, you don't want to go to service levels that are going to be the highest producers. But what they would do is look at the services that maybe probably into the evening hours, if they have those, or if they have a Saturday service or Sunday service, they would be looking at cutting those services back. Right now, the Greater Minnesota Transportation plan indicates that there's additional needs that we're doing there, and one of the things that we consistently from every year is identify the unmet needs that are being identified by the transit properties on their annual application. In 2008, they identified an additional 250,000 hours of unmet needs of services on the street right now. This cutback would add roughly another $50,000 to that.
Representative Hornstein?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm thinking back on a hearing that our policy subcommittee had about a little more than a year ago in St. Cloud. And, you know, at that time, a lot of it, Mr. Gottfried, I'm glad you mentioned the unmet needs that currently exist, because we had a lot of people talking about they couldn't get around in evenings and weekends as it is. And so, I mean, I think this is just going to make a bad situation worse. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question about what happens under a scenario of unallotment, and if these type of cuts could be made under an unallotment situation. Just assuming for a moment that the governor will not agree to cut the budget in the way that we propose, and we leave here in May, and the unallotment process is used by the governor, would these type of cuts be made in the unallotment process? Because I can tell you right now that I'm not going to be, I don't see this caucus proposing these cuts.
Mr. Gottfried?
Chairman, Representative, as I see it, generally it is left up to the department to allocate the cuts, as it were. And historically, when we've dealt with cuts, and we have dealt with cuts before, we do it on a across-the-board basis. So, for example, a transit system that currently now has 10,000 hours of service, we would be looking at a 5% reduction across the board for all the transit systems.
Representative Horton.
A follow-up, and I don't know if this is a question for Mr. Burris. Can the legislature indicate parameters to unallotment? So, for example, if we wanted the Department of Transportation to not be permitted to cut from...
Mr. Burris is ill today. So maybe Mr. Gottfried might...
Or Mr. Gray, perhaps, could let me know if in the past the legislature is able to provide any limitations on the unallotment to protect transit in this situation.
Chair, Leader, and members, first of all, as part of the executive branch, if the governor directed us to reduce service levels or effectively to reduce funding towards Greater Minnesota Transit, we would comply with that. I think that that's the, if you will, the CEO prerogative. That said, I believe that the legislature can indicate its preferences, but I don't think the governor is bound to them short that it's in a bill or law sort of format. I would defer that question to the Department of Finance. So my sense is if whatever the outcome is, that if the governor chose to direct agencies to reduce spending in certain areas, I believe those agencies would intend to comply with that directive.
Representative Horton.
Mr. Chair, it's just my intention that if the governor decides to cut transit, that it's very clear that the governor's decision to cut transit, and he does so under extreme protest from the folks here running the legislature.
Representative Medore.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Gottfried, I'm wondering, has anybody done any kind of outreach to the local businesses? As you know, we've heard much testimony from disabled people and older people who are unable to either A, afford their cars, or B, are unable to drive, that still have jobs. So has there been a communication to the small business owners and large business owners in Greater Minnesota that if, in fact, these cuts go through, we may be looking at people having to leave their jobs? And are they going to be able to fill those jobs without having bus line service?
Mr. Godfrey?
Representative Leader, Representative Lador. We have at this point in time been just digesting the impact of this potential legislation and the governor's request. So no contact actually has been made with the transit properties nor in turn the business communities that would be affected.
Want to follow up, Mr. Chair? Yes, well then I'm wondering what is the procedure to do that, because I want to be sure that the business community is made fully aware that by continuing to have this attack on transit, that they are in fact attacking the ability for employers to keep employees who are unable to afford a car, drive a car, or have access to a vehicle. So we are making the governor is making a definite directive cut here to individuals who are unable to afford other transportation options. And given that we are looking at gas at $3 plus a gallon this summer, we are also looking at a number of college students who need summer jobs because of our cuts to education funding that are going to have no access to be able to get to those jobs. So, again, I follow Representative Portman. This is with extreme, this is not the position of this caucus to go ahead and authorize cuts to transit. And I would strongly suggest that the business community engage in this discussion because they will ultimately be the ones suffering with this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Doherty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Related topic, different direction. I attend meeting after meeting in my rural district from disabled people, from elderly people, from county offices saying we need more rural transit. To what extent did the regions or DHS get involved in this decision to cut? Is this the governor's own idea? Is this MnDOT's suggestion? Or do you indeed take input from other agencies in deciding these cuts?
Representative Leader and Representative Cody, I'm aware that we are in constant working with DHS and other state agencies, Department of Education, Department of Health, and all the affected clientele that use public transit services in Greater Minnesota. Our intention is to work with them as these cuts are looked at at the transit level. So in other words, the actual decision of the percentage change or the reduction of service hours will occur at the individual transit system. So our department will avail itself to work with them and assist with their where the impact would be minimized as best we possibly can.
Chair Leader, Member,
another question. Oh, excuse me.
I was going to say, the other part of the question was the level of involvement in this decision. This was a governor's recommendation that we're complying with.
Representative Hollisman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I may be wrong, but I have a different take on this. I have always thought that with the budget, the governor proposes and the legislature disposes. In other words, when the budget is passed, unless it's vetoed, that is the budget. And I would think that that would include this year's budget balancing bill, that only if we do nothing, that we don't balance the budget, that unallotment would become the issue. To the issue of Greater Minnesota Transit and transit all over the state, members, and the reason I think why we all feel so strongly about this is one of the departments in this administration, I understand, the DHS, has a great fear of something they've even coined, the silver tsunami, and that is this growing older population all across the state. And as grocery stores close in small towns and as medical clinics close, that getting seniors around all over the state will become our responsibility. I mean, that as elected officials, that's when we wear the mantle state representatives, and we have to be certain that the alternatives we put into place actually serve the state in a comprehensive way. So, my sense is that as long as we're doing our work well this session and propose a balanced budget in a budget balancing bill, that does, again, unless vetoed, become the budget.
Mr. Gray, do you want to comment or not?
No, I think that's probably true. If we have a balanced budget and a direction and appropriation spending authority from the legislature, I think we're going to comply with that I do know that the governor is responsible in the Department of Finance for ensuring that we have a balanced budget in the absence of that coming from the legislature.
Representative Housen. Representative Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, I think I'm correct in saying that not all 80 outstate counties have countywide transit. There are actually a few counties, in fact, one I live in, that doesn't have countywide transit. Mr. Guffey, I just want to check my math. Maybe it's an early Monday morning and I haven't had coffee yet. How many hours of service are there in transit in Greater Minnesota each year before the $50,000 hour reduction?
Mr. Guffey.
Representative Leader, Representative Chair. The current service hours that we're projecting is about 980,000 hours of service for Greater Minnesota at this point in time. That is projecting for the year end for 2007.
Mr. Chair, if I may follow up, thank you, Mr. Guffey. That's about where my math was, so I feel a little bit better. I understand that we'll be reducing, if this proposal is accepted, by 50,000, and we have 250,000 hours of unmet needs in Greater Minnesota in public transit, which would, if this were accepted, put us about 300,000 hours of either unmet or unfunded needs, and we had 980. So we're talking maybe one-third more needs to be added to Greater Minnesota. We're about one. I don't know if I'm doing my math right, Mr. Godfrey, so I'll defer to you, but it sounds like a sizable chunk of unmet need in Greater Minnesota.
Representative Magnuson, Chair, your coffee is working very well today. I'd like to have a cup of it someday. The situation right now from the state transportation plan is roughly about 330,000 hours. We would be short based on that per pass. You are correct.
Good. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And then Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to a couple of the comments made by Representative Hortman and Medora here. You know, when we're talking about the governor unallotting, you weren't here when we did the last unallotment, but I got into office in 2003. We had a $4.5 billion budget shortfall, and that was not something that was real fun. The governor got put in a position where he had to make the budget meet at the end of that fiscal year. And so the legislature really didn't have any hand on it, the previous legislature, to really begin to balance that process. That's not the case here. We have a billion-dollar budget shortfall here. If the legislature refuses to act and balance the budget going out of this session, then the governor will unlock. And it's not going to be on the back of the governor. So if you're trying to trump up a message that says the governor is against transit, it's going to fall on deaf ears. It's going to fall on the legislature here today that says they refuse to do their job. And Representative Medora, you can shake your head all you want, but it's the truth, and it's what's going to happen unless we really take charge and say, we've got a budget to meet. That's our responsibility when we get this elected ticket. And you've got to do the hard decisions. And for us to pawn this off, as I have heard in numerous committees, that, you know, I just can't do this. I just can't cut the budget. Well, welcome to the club. You know, when we first got in here, 6 years ago, we had to address a huge deficit issue, and that was no fun. But, you know, when you come into this $2.2 billion budget surplus, and then we spent that away, spent ourselves into a deficit here, now it's time to pay the piper. So this is some tough decisions that are going to come down the pike. If we don't do it now, the governor will unlock. But we have forced his hand to do that.
Mr. Chairman, I think I'm just presenting this bill as an informational meeting this morning, am I not?
That's correct.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm listening to the concerns, and I don't want to cut either. Okay, but we've got to make some choices here. We can cut or we cannot cut, and let the governor do it. But I'm just presenting this as information. We'll be wrestling this a long time, Mr. Chairman, and you well know. You've been through this before, as has Representative Allison and Holberg. The veteran members have been through this before many times. And someone's got to make a decision. But I think let's just move on with providing the information and recognize that's what it is. I'm just providing the information for the supplemental budget.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually think Representative Severson's comments are a good segue to what I was going to say. Mr. Backreed and Representative Magnus, before I was elected to the legislature, I was the vice chair of our Regional Development Commission, who did was the facilitator of the, as Representative Morrow was talking about, the unmet need study with the Department of Human Services, and I believe it was your office as well, Mr. Godfrey, that helped facilitate that. And to Representative Hausman's point, sometimes we talk about cuts as being taking away an expected increase, but in this case, when you look at an expected need that will not be met, mm-hmm. that we have so much work to do, and we're actually going to be, it's sort of like when my farmers, do moisture tests in the soil, and they say we're going to need more rain so that our crops don't die, and then having all of a sudden having a drought forecast come out. Our seniors, one of the things that I've been thinking about over the last 4 or 5 months is I don't want to see anybody, whether it's the legislature, whether it's our votes, Representative Severson, or the governor's pen, balance the budget on the backs of seniors or on the backs of vulnerable adults. These cuts proposed do that, both in greater Minnesota and in the Metro Transit. The 250,000 hours of unmet need, Representative Morrow, came out of those studies that we did. And the township board members, the county commissioners, the city council members that serve on the Regional Development Commission are not exactly the most liberal risk. They're very risk averse. And you're not exactly your champions of transit in stereotypes. But man, if you could hear them talk about how much we need to do this, that this proposal does balance. So I propose balancing, and I appreciate Representative Magnus, it's just information for us to work from, but it would balance the budget on the backs of seniors and on vulnerable adults. I just don't think that we should do that after the cuts that were made in 2003.
We're only going to take two more questions. Actually, as I'm aware of what it is, this perhaps generates more questions than some of the others, because some of the roads and stuff like that can defer without getting into this problem. But we'll take two more questions that we have, and we better move on because we're going to get out of here by 11.
Mr. Chairman,
11:15.
Mr. Gray and I have been talking.
Mr. Chair, we're talking about that.
I have two more people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Just to clarify this a little bit, maybe, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Mr. Chair and members, clearly there's an impact, particularly in fiscal 09, which means the tail end of this calendar year and calendar year 09 in the transit system. They operate on a calendar year basis. There is something going to Representative Morrow's comments. I'm very anxious to hear what the new funding, as we continue to stand that phase in, and with the new funding from House File 2800, the light at the end of the tunnel is brighter, I believe. I don't have any facts or statistics as to how much coverage we'll be able to, how much ground we'll be able to cover, but definitely in fiscal 10 and beyond, between the MDES amendment phase in and the House File 2800 with the sales tax on these vehicles, of which Greater Minnesota Transit is a direct beneficiary, I think we'll have more optimistic news to talk about in terms of expanded coverage and service. So I'm looking forward to that conversation as well. I appreciate the concerns about the immediate impact, which is real. But I also wanted to say that there is something more positive to look forward to. So I hope Mr. Godfrey and I come back in the not too distant future and talk about those events. But we're still digesting that revenue stream, and the session isn't over, so we're not in a position to really talk about that further at this point.
Representative Horton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to respond to Representative Severson's point about unallotment. I don't propose that this legislature is going to leave town without passing a balanced budget. I just know the governor doesn't have a very good history of signing our budget bills. Last year, most of our budget bills were vetoed. This year, the transportation bill was vetoed. So the possibility is there that we balance the budget, but we balance it in a way that the governor doesn't like. And then he chooses to veto it, and he chooses to proceed with an allotment. I don't mean to suggest for a second that you or I, Representative Severson, will not pass a balanced budget out of this legislature this year, but I can't control what happens once it leaves this building.
Representative Medor, we'd like to cut this off. We're getting in the way out of line here. We've got some things to do. Representative Medor.
To that point, Mr. Chair, I'll pass on my question.
Thanks. Mr. Gray or Mr. Yes. Magnus, okay. Representative Magnus.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair leaders, members, I think we've talked to the transit impacts in 2009 and beyond. With respect to local roads, another piece of House File 2800 is that a portion of the sales tax on leased vehicles did go to the county system as well, the state aid system, and that's the $365,000, which would be effective in FY 2011. On the state roads construction side, there is an 08 change request, which is, you might say it's late in the session for us, or the fiscal year for that, but following the collapse of the bridge, there was legislation sponsored by Representative Oberstar, in which the Congress dedicated an additional $1 billion towards bridge structures replacements and high priority bridge needs. That was over and above the federal highway formula money, and is essentially, if you will, new federal monies. This request is to allow us to get us the spending appropriation authority to, upon receipt of that fund, of those funds, to actually apply those towards bridges. We have not selected a project yet. In fact, the federal feds have not identified clearly the criteria, other than it will be for high priority bridges. And this was Minnesota's share of that $1 billion that was authorized by Congress, I believe, about 6 weeks ago.
Mr. Gray, is there a time frame on that money?
Chair Leader, I don't believe so. I think the time frame will be clarified further once they get the criteria for which bridges are eligible for this money. But the key point here is that it's new money, and that when it's put into the system, this request will allow us the ability to spend that money and add to our impact in terms of delivering more bridges and replacements. Finally, Mr. Chair, if there are no questions on that, I wanted to comment on one other governor's request that relates to MnDOT, at least indirectly, and that's in the Department of Public Safety. If you will note, the last supplemental request in the worksheet is for the redesign of the DVS computer system. And while that's clearly in Department of Public Safety's bailiwick, the key here is that it's funded with trunk highway fund dollars. And that is, I believe, a total request of $48 million, of which $12 million, beginning in 2009, $12 million a year for 9, 10, 11, and then there'll be another year in 2012. I think the estimate for the cost of the system is approaching $50 million for that redesign. So that has a trunk highway fund balance impact, and the appropriation would be for to DPS for this purpose out of the trunk highway fund. So it's not a spending request impacting state roads directly per se, but it is for that purpose, and it does impact the trunk highway fund balance. So I just call it to attention. You'll hear more about the needs of the system and the system redesign efforts from the Department of Public Safety.
Mr. Gray, we do have someone here from the department, so we could review that. Does that kind of take care of your portion?
Chair Leader, I believe so. Unless there are any other questions from you or the committee.
They may have questions. You'll be here, I'm sure.
I'll be here. Yeah, thank
you, Mr. Gray. Someone from the Department of DVS?
Something like that?
Peter, Mr. Oh. We just hit this. I know, we just hit this. We just talked about it.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Mary Allison. I'm Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety, and Director Pat McCormick from Driver and Vehicle Services, and I are here to answer any questions that you have about the request for the replacement of the Driver Vehicle Services information system. The pages are handing out a fact sheet. Magnus has just pointed out that I might want to mention the administrative cut of $28,000 per year. That request was made last session for a coordinator for the Republican National Convention. He did hire that person, and she did a wonderful job and brought the different state agencies together. We found over time that we were able to absorb Those duties, once you get her initial work within the department, so we have that reduction in the budget. And then, as was mentioned previously, we have a request for $12 million per year to replace the driver vehicle information system. We have a brief fact sheet in front of you. Through the driver vehicle system, we have thousands and thousands of people that access that system every day. It collects about $3 billion annually for the state of Minnesota. We are in great need of a redesign and replacement of that system in order to accomplish all the business needs that we have in front of us. With those brief comments, I'll turn it over to Director McCormick, and then we'll answer any questions that you have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. For the record, Pat McCormick with CVS. And as you may remember, at the end of last session, you were kind enough to appropriate money that was remaining in our special revenue account so that we could begin a pre-design of a new information system. And the purpose of this is to fund an automated system that supports both driver license and motor vehicle programs so that we can deliver service in an integrated and automated, timely and dependable fashion. As you can see on the fact sheet we presented, there are several risks to our current system that we need to address. As we've talked about before and we talked about last session, the stability of our system is at risk. We are being very careful not to add any additional programming changes at this time unless absolutely necessary so that we can keep the system going and ensure that we are able to continue to collect the $1.1 billion that we currently do annually. So there are plenty of programs that we have been asked to complete and to address in terms of federal mandates. At the end of the meeting, I'll provide you with some fact sheets on those. Most importantly, one of those is the Motor Carrier Safety Improvement Act. As you may have read in the paper, we are under notice that we must have that completed by September 30th of this year so that we can meet the mandate of that act. And in completing what's called structured testing, and what that means is that we have to be able to electronically message other states so that we are ensuring that CDL drivers have one driver, one record, one history, and so that we are ensuring that commercial drivers are able to be driving safely, and if they can't drive safely and have any violations, that then those drivers are taken off the road. We will meet that deadline. We're working very hard on that, but that's where all of our efforts are going at this current time, and it will be difficult on the mainframe, but we are managing to get it done, and we have a lot of help and resources that we've been able to utilize towards that end. In addition to that project, though, we have been working on a pre-design so that we are able to scope out and plan a new system. And we've surveyed a great many states who have recently built systems, and we feel confident that the cost would be between around $48 million. We're looking at having a plan that would take 4 years so that we could keep our current system running as we were rebuilding the system. And by rebuilding, what I mean is we would do it in chunks. We would do different parts of our system at different times, programs that would interrelate to each other or have similarities would be done at one time as we are maintaining the other system. We feel it's important after listening to other states that we do it in a 4-year period of time because there are states that have taken longer than that, say that additional costs arise and that oftentimes technology is no longer as valid as it would have been, and so we need to get it done in about a 4-year time period, and that's the reason that there is a request for $12 million in each of the next 4 fiscal years. So with that, I'd just like to say that we believe this initiative will really enable us to have to accomplish our mission to provide fair, accurate, secure, and timely service, and also give us the ability to manage our data, not just store it and retrieve it as we currently have to do right now. And we'll be glad to answer any questions that you have.
The question from either of you, this is a $12 million annual hit from Trunk Highway. Of all of the fees that you get, have there been certain areas that the fees have not been adjusted, that some of this could be picked up by fees?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, as you might remember, last session we requested a 75-cent fee, and that was just to pay for our current operations, current staffing levels, and so there is not any additional dollars that we're taking in that we would be able to put towards this new development.
Ms. McCormick, I was wondering, because most of your money is a pass-through, to some degree it's a pass-through, but looking at all the areas which you serve, some of these areas, I don't know if the fees have been adjusted, but it appears to me that rather than taking Trunk Highway funds, somewhere along the line we could generate some money. I know on motor vehicle licenses, we've got a statute that says you can't make money on license, is that correct? When was that, about 8 years ago?
Mr. Chair, that was in 2005. We became a special revenue account, and so the fees that we collected were put into those special revenue accounts that we have.
Ms. McCormick, also there's a statute that says you can't make any money on licenses, is that correct? You just recover the cost. That's what I'm wondering. And apparently,
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Apparently now I see there's a bill coming through where you have excess license plates that have to be, somehow there's been a cost involved and you don't recuperate and we have to get rid of those. Is that also true?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we just started looking at that particular bill, so I would have to get back to you on that. I haven't had time to talk to staff about that bill and whether that would, how that might impact us.
The question I have, prior to this statute, you used to be able to charge some charge on the license plate that recovered some of your costs. And if that were repealed, wouldn't that pick up, how many licenses do you issue, about 4 million a year or what, roughly?
In terms of vehicle registration, about 4.9 million registration notices go out every year. There are certainly fees that could be raised, but we would have to raise enough revenue in any fee that would be added to our to the products that we issue right now and to the fees we currently have in order to be able to raise $12 million a year. That would be a significant fee increase.
Even a portion of it is what I was thinking. But I presume any of the fees that you have, they're pretty much dedicated to some reason. Driver's license fee that you get to 75 cents, whatever, that goes to driver's license, but there must be some area where it isn't identified, is that correct?
Mr. Chair, in all of these fees that we collect, it is either sent to other funds or else we retain it in order to administer our programs.
Representative Worrell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I think I'm following up on your questions. I appreciate Ms. McCormick that we did the pre-design last year, and I agree with you. You and I have had a chance to talk about the need for this computer system, especially under your risks of system failure. We've talked about law enforcement and law enforcement needs, and this would seem to be a logical next step. But my question, Ms. McCormick, following up on Chairman Leader, is I understand there's a bill moving through the Senate right now, at least, concerning fees directed right to this question about funding the computer system. Are you familiar with that bill that's moving through the Senate? Mm-hmm. And if so, could you describe it, because I think you may know it better than I do.
Mr. Chair and Representative Morrow, I think that's the fees would increase by $1.75,
for various transactions that we now produce, driver's licenses, titles, tab renewals, fees.
And Mr. Chair and Ms. McCormick, thank you. That was the same number I had, was I think $1.75 per transaction. I think maybe, Chairman Leader, maybe that's the type of fee toward which you're looking. Mr. Chair, I don't know the trunk highway money well enough. What would, if we did $12 million out of trunk highway money, does that mean $12 million left for roads and bridges?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. Ms. McCormick, again, and I'll call on you just a minute. Ms. McCormick? I don't know what your tenure has been with the department, but when was the change made that you couldn't pick up any, wasn't that about 8 years ago, an administration, or your fees over above your administration costs? That was specific to motor vehicle licenses. Or was that before your time?
Mr. Chair, that may have been before my time. The only law I'm aware of is the one in 2005 when we specifically changed over so that the fees that we collected, not the other money we collect, revenue that we collect, but the fees for our producing the products that we do, was put deposited in our special revenue account. So I'm not aware of that. I'm not sure if our finance director remembers anything.
Is that to that question? Otherwise, I represent Hortman, Mr. Representative Nelson. Is that to that question?
No.
Representative Hortman? Well,
Mr. Chair, it follows up on the same questions I think you and Representative Morrow were asking. I'm wondering to what degree the cost of getting a driver's license or a title or a license plate is subsidized by a taxpayer other than the person getting the license plate. I understand that fees are put into special revenue accounts, but there's also all these other annual revenues from, like, $650 million from the Highway User Tax Fund. So I'm just curious if the Highway User Tax Fund is subsidizing the cost of getting a driver's license so that it's artificially low.
Ms. McCormick?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hortman, the money that we're collecting are taxes that are mentioned below here. It includes, for instance, Highway User Tax Fund is the registration taxes. The fees that are in our special revenue accounts are only the filing fees that we collect in terms of doing the processing of those, and that money pays for our budget. So we do not keep money that is tax money. That is not the fees we're talking about. We're only talking about the fees that we pay, that our staff collects in order to do the business. Mr. Chair, Representative Magnus suggested that maybe we need to put a little bit more information together for the committee's review at your next meeting.
Mr. Chairman, you know, we have the critical habitat plates, the veterans plates, and different types of veterans plates and all of that. And we've been through this many times. And if the committee wishes, we can get more information about where some of those funds go. My understanding, they don't all go in and stay at the department here.
No.
They go to other places.
That's what we try to avoid, being a collection agent.
Right.
So
to answer the question I think some people have is that, for example, the repealer in here, in the bill, the last line repeals, there's a $5 surcharge on the Iraq War, Afghan War, and the Gulf War veterans' plates. That repeals that $5 surcharge, but there still remains the $10 charge that we have traditionally been charging on this. And it's my recollection, Mr. Chairman, that we've been doing this as a matter of practice. When a new plate like this comes out, we put a $5 surcharge on for a period of time.
That's the cost to cover the plate, but the $10 doesn't stay here. That goes to the veterans. That's concern we have. We want to be a collection agency.
Right. That's what we're getting into is we need more information passed out, I think, to you. It might be helpful.
Thank you. Representative Hortman.
I appreciate that you're willing to provide us with more information. The two things I'm interested in seeing is when a person gets a driver's license, if they're paying the cost that it takes to produce that license and get it to that person, same with the title, same with the license plate. And also on your handout it says that you collect over $1.1 billion annually in fees, but then it lists all these other major annual revenues. And so I'm wondering, why we have all these other tax revenues going in if there's $1.1 billion in fees and how that's divided in your budget.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hortman, those are fees that we are, those are revenues we collect on behalf of the state. Those are not revenues that we keep. We collect those. We collect the sales tax on motor vehicles. We collect the registration taxes. There's a certain amount of money that we collect from the driver's license that goes to the Department of Transportation. And so this is why our information system is so important, because we are collecting all these taxes on behalf of the state. They are not revenues that DVS keeps. The DVS is operated on the filing fees that we collect, and yes, the driver's license, other than the trunk highway money that goes to the Department of Transportation.
Right. Mr. Chair, I think that the major annual revenues box probably refers to outflows from your agency rather than inflows. Is that
right?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know we need to get to...
Yeah, we will.
Borman, I think the confusion might be... I understand what you're getting at. The box refers to the revenues we collect, but then underneath it refers to fees, and it uses the $1.1 billion annually. I think that's the confusion there. The $1.1 billion total should be revenues collected, not...
If you would get us additional information, we probably should get you back, and we'd like to... At this point, with public safety, you had a question, Representative Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. McCormick. The question I have has to do with the Real ID that's coming out here. You're redesigning the system, and we can debate the value of what whether we support Real ID, but I know that's going on. This current system that we're buying and setting up here, will that be able to support that, or if that does become law, are we going to have to come back and put more money into this to take care of that?
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, the new system would be able to communicate with other systems so that you could do electronic verifications, which is part of the requirements of the Real ID Act. And I do have a handout that will talk a little bit more about that. But, yes, there are several federal programs that they're asking motor vehicle agencies to get involved with. One is Real ID, the other is NMVDIS, the National Motor Vehicle Title Information System. And so there's many different programs out there where we need to electronically communicate, and the current mainframe system does not easily allow us to do that.
Ms. McCormick and Ms. Ellison, we'll probably get you back because we need some additional information. I think pretty much we've hit the budget portion. You're kind of getting a little bit further off. And thank you for coming.
One additional thing, Mr. Chairman, on the last page of this, the bill and examination requirement for folks that have violated their driver's license by involving the sale or possession of controlled substances, that section's in there, and included in that is the $30 fee to get your license back. So that, I think that finishes it. The question, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, I welcome an opportunity to come before you today to provide an overview of the financial picture for the 08-09 biennium of the regional transit system. To my right is Amy Benowitz, who was instrumental in putting together the materials that I'll be presenting to you today. The first slide that I have for you today, Mr. Chair, is just a very quick 30,000-foot view of the current situation that the current financial picture of the regional transit system. We face a $1 million deficit for the balance of this fiscal year 08. A $28 to $40 million deficit in state fiscal year 09. And there's a couple of assumptions that that would include. One is that we maintain our current bus and rail service. The second assumption is that there are no fare increases or service reductions. The third consideration is that we fund our new commitment, namely the UPA, the Urban Partnership Agreement, the matching funds for that, as well as our North Star startup costs. And the fourth is looking at major changes in our funding sources, which really accounts for the variation between the 28 and 40 million. That would include MVEF, as you well are aware, our joint, the new joint powers board that will be deciding how sales tax revenue gets allocated, as well as the general fund.
Mr. Bell?
Yeah.
Excuse me. Is that assuming then no new monies under the new the bill that was passed, House File 2800? It's not assumption of new monies other than the motor vehicle excise tax. Is that correct?
It assumes the changes in the motor vehicle. Are you talking about the sales tax?
Something about that. Yeah. The sales tax is, excuse me, the sales tax is not in this assumption, but it's the what we call the motor vehicle excise tax, which we passed constitutional amendment. That's in here, but not the new monies.
That's correct. It is important, I think, to start with some changes since the end of the
Mr. Chair?
Representative Holker.
Can I just clarify, when you say not the new monies, you're meaning not the new monies that go to the Joint Powers Board, but these numbers do reflect the new monies in House File 2800. They do not go to the Joint Powers Board, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
There's some changes since the end of the 07 session. One of the most significant is the decline in the MVEF forecast in November of 07. That impacted primarily the 08 biennium. Actually, there was a slight increase there and a decrease in the 09. Other revenue and expense changes, those principally, I will go over, but were increases in healthcare costs, fuel and the like. North Star and UPA commitments, the February 2008 transportation funding bill, the decline in MVEF forecast in 08, in February of 08, it has changed dramatically since the November 07 forecast, as well as the two cuts that the governor is proposing in our budget. One across the board, general fund, as well as an additional $26 million. To go further in detail on this, at the end of the 2007 session, there were a number of things that I think it's important to note. The legislature provided us $20 million in a general fund appropriation. As you know, there was no transportation bill. We were facing a deficit. They provided us $20 million of general fund appropriations to address our deficit, and it did all but $100,000, as you can see, though it did leave us with a projected deficit in fiscal year 09 of $7.7 million. As I mentioned, there was a number of changes from May, when the legislature adjourned, to December of 07. The most significant is the November 07 MVEF forecast. As I indicated a minute ago, that actually was slightly up for the fiscal year we're in now of $1.1 million, but it also was down for our upcoming fiscal year 09 of $5 million. And other changes had a slightly beneficial effect, but also a negative effect in 09. Some of those other changes were fuel cost increases of $3 million per year, health benefit cost increases of $4 million per year,
And also, this is a good thing, fare revenue increases were higher because of increased ridership in our Metro Transit system. In Metro Transit, we have had about an 11% increase from February of 07 to February of 08. As you can see, in December of 07, coming into calendar year 08, our deficit was $17 million for fiscal year 09, and a 1.5 surplus, actually, we projected in December for our current fiscal year. Mr. Chair, do you want me to go through the entire slideshow and take questions, or take questions throughout?
If you can get through it quickly, then we'd have time for questions. Otherwise, I think we probably won't get through it if we interrupt for a lot of questions.
All right. Here are some commitments, a new fiscal year 09 commitment. What you see at the top of the page is a carryover from the previous page. The surplus, this is as of December of 07, of $1.5 million and the $17 million deficit in 09. We have some new commitments that we need to honor. North Star startup cost of $3.2 million. Now, the total cost of North Star startup is $6.4 million. The $3.2 million that you see here is the 50% not funded by the county. What their cost would be. And the startup costs, broadly speaking, are for vehicle purchases, training, and the like. UPA capital is the federal match for capital not eligible for state GO bonds, and that's $4 million. And the 35W bridge response of $1.1 million. You will recall, Mr. Chair, we got $5 million when the bridge collapsed. We have used all of that. This is essentially to maintain some level of service, of additional service that was started with that $5 million that we received from the bridge collapse, park and ride, express bus service, and the like. When we add the commitments that we have, our surplus in December that we projected of 1.5 remains, but with those additional commitments, our deficit for fiscal year 09 is $25.3 million. To continue with the story unfolding, for February 08, we have the transportation bill. We carried forward the surplus that we anticipated for fiscal year 08 of 1.5, and from the previous page, the deficit is 25.3. And we have some, the transportation bill caused some additional costs to us. The first of those is the Hiawatha Rail operation. This is, or 50% of the Hiawatha Rail operation. This is the county's share of the Hiawatha operating costs, which the transportation bill eliminated. North Star Rail startup. This is $2.4 million. There's a small point here that needs to be understood. This does not include the $800,000 already levied by Anoka County, but the legislation and the recent transportation bill said that those costs would not be covered. We would cover those costs. A plus is the $30.8 million in the transportation bill that was to go to us to cover our deficit. It wasn't specified exactly how we would spend that, but that is a plus. So you can see net new revenues is $25.8 million when you deduct the figures that I gave a moment ago. And the surplus for 08 remained at $1.5 million, and the deficit for 09 dropped from 25.3 to $500,000. That was our situation after the transportation bill passed. Then, after the transportation bill passed, as we keep going kind of in a sequential order, we got the new MVEST forecast. That, of course, was not a pretty picture. You can see the $1.5 million surplus in 08, our current fiscal year, and the $500,000 surplus in 09. However, when you take into account the MVEST forecast, which was a kick in the teeth, that's $2.5 million less for fiscal year 08, of which we're coming to the end. And so we had that challenge immediately, plus a $15 million reduction in fiscal year 09. And you can see that put us in a deficit position both for this fiscal year and for our next fiscal year. A couple of things to note. In November 07, the forecast was from the MVEST forecast for fiscal year 08 was $120 million. In February 08, it was $116 million. The change was $3.5 million. And for 09, it went from 139 to 123, a $15.7 million change. Those are significant changes in the MVEST forecast. This slide perhaps illustrates it best. You can see in fiscal year 02, we anticipated getting $613 million from MVEST. It's important to note that is a statewide figure. That doesn't all come to us. That's for the entire state. In fiscal year 09, that figure dropped to $445 million. That is a huge, huge hit. What we were projecting, the 581, if you go up the screen, if you could move your eyes from the 445 all the way up to the 581, that's what we were projecting, and statewide, we're down to 445. This has had a huge impact. MVEST, and I will show in a minute, in essentially what the situation we face is we are getting a larger percent of a shrinking pie is really what the situation is. We get an ever-increasing piece of a pie that continues to evaporate. This is the impact of the previous slide on Metro Transit operations. And the most important data points on this slide is the $161,255 versus $123 million. That is the major difference that we are facing. And one of the things I think perhaps to draw your attention best, or to illustrate this point, in fiscal year 03, we got 20.5% of the MVEST in fiscal year 03. That was $124 million. In fiscal year 09, because of the MVEST fade-in, we will get 27.75% of MVEST. So 7% more of MVEST. Yet, what we will actually receive in dollars will go from $124 million to $123 million. So our percentage of MVEST grows from 20.5 to 27, almost 28%, and yet the dollar amount we get stays flat. That's really the takeaway from this slide, and it impacts us to no small degree. There are a number of things that we are considering doing. We start off with the deficit now. This is really and brings us from the past all the way up to today. We have a deficit in fiscal year 08 of $1 million, in 09 of 14.5. And here are some of the potential measures which have received a great deal of discussion of late. Is to secure $7.4 million for Hiawatha operations. Now this, that 7.4, 2.6 of that is the county share, and 4.8 would have come from MVEP. So as you can see what happened with MVEP, we could potentially go to the Joint Powers Board and say fund not only the 2.6 of county funding, but the 4.8 that would have come from MVEP, and we may go to the Joint Powers Board for that. The $4.7 million dollars that you see for North Star, 2.4 of that is from the Metro County share, and the other 2.3 would have been the state share. So we could go to the Joint Powers Board essentially for the county share as well as the state share for Hiawatha, the county share and the state share for North Star startup. And then you can see what I talked about earlier, the 0.9 would be for Sherburne County, and that would have to come from Greater Minnesota Fund. You just had a presentation on Greater Minnesota Transit. They have 4% of the MVEP dollars as well as other transit dollars. It potentially could come from them or Sherburne County or a combination therein. And finally, taking $4 million from our regional bonding authority. We have $32 million that was just approved for that, and we could use that for UPA capital. And that would make $17 million. So you can see, if we took all of those actions, which are currently allowed for by law, we would have a $1 million deficit for fiscal year 08, and a $2.5 million surplus for fiscal year 09. Just to put this a bit in a context, we don't know all who is going to be participating in the new Joint Powers Board. The revenues we crudely anticipate is being anywhere from about $85 million to $110 million per year. If we followed some of those potential changes that I talked about, you can see in fiscal year 09, that would take $43 million of that $85 to $110 million. In fiscal year 10, it would take $21.8 million of that $85 to $110 million. My point being this. There's a great deal of legitimate concern and consternation among some of the county boards of not levying a sales tax and then using those dollars, for lack of a better word, to backfill our transit budget. My point is a very clear one here. In my judgment, that would not happen. There would be ample revenues to fund, for instance, the $270 million for Central Corridor, dollars for perhaps the Southwest Corridor, as well as other transit corridors. It would not come close to eating up all those dollars. Another very important fact for this committee to understand and consider. The FTA will not fund any transit expansion if we are degrading our bus service. So if we are raising fares and cutting back routes, at the same time we're bringing new transit service on, they simply will not fund their 50% of the capital cost. My position is that we would be able to go to the Joint Powers Board. There's no, though I will be serving on it, there is no guarantee that they will be providing those revenues for us. They will make their own decision. They will make their own decision. I have just a very small amount of votes allocated to the Met Council. However, we have been in discussions with them. They are keenly aware that the FTA will not fund a transit operation if, in fact, in one part of our system, if we are degrading them in another part of our system.
Excuse me, Mr. Bell. Could you kind of, some of the areas that maybe aren't as pertinent to get into the budget, we have questions, and we definitely will be out of here in 20 minutes.
All right. All right, let me go to the next page and perhaps I will end there. It is only fair to address what the governor has recommended as well, because that presents us with additional challenges. The $1 million you can see carried over from the previous page, the $2.5 million surplus, the governor has recommended a one-time a cut in our general fund appropriations of $26.8 million. That's to deal with the nearly $1 billion deficit of which you have spoken earlier this morning, as well as the 4% across the board cut of $3.2 million. That's $30 million. If, in fact, those cuts were to go through, you can see we would maintain the $1 million deficit for fiscal year 08, but that brings up our fiscal year 09 deficit to $27.5 million. And if we don't get the joint powers grants that I talked about earlier, that would move our deficit to nearly $40 billion. And, Mr. Chair, the only thing I would add, in deference to questions that people may have, is that we would have to deal with that situation through fairly significant fare increases as well as fairly significant route reductions throughout our entire system. And those need a 5 to 6 month lead time. The FTA requires we hold public hearings if we're going to raise fares or reduce services, and we have a bit of a compression problem because we would need to start that immediately. Once again, not only is that create a challenge for our current transit system, but the FDA is ever mindful of that activity as well. And with that, Mr. Chair, in deference to the time constraints, I'll end my presentation and entertain any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to focus on slide 7 because I think we need to acknowledge that even before the governor's proposed cuts, you had a problem. After the transportation bill was passed and before the governor's cuts, you had a problem. And so, you know, some of my friends didn't quite understand why I was not as enthused as some about our transportation bill. We did very well for roads. But it didn't quite include what we needed for transit, and that slide 7, I think, shows that after the transportation bill and before the governor's cut, we already had a challenge. What I would like to ask about is this continuing challenge that the UPA is for us. And my understanding is that MnDOT and Met Council, and that may be wrong, that MnDOT and Met Council pursued that federal money, and that now that that federal money has been approved, we have this challenge of $55 million for the state match. Given the fact that we knew before that, that this year we had that huge match for the Central Corridor, help me understand what the thought process was at the time that the UPA was designed, because that was before the transportation bill. How did we propose to do both the state match and the Central Corridor match?
Mr. Bell.
Now, Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, a couple of points that I would make. One is the UPA grant primarily exists to fund two of our Tier 1 transit ways, which is the 35W busway as well as the Cedar Avenue busway. And we went through a great deal of work establishing what our Tier 1 transit ways were and saw this as an excellent opportunity to move that transportation option forward. So we were actually quite excited about the opportunity to provide some federal matching dollars into transit systems that were part of our Tier 1 transitway. The second part of my answer to what I see as a legitimate question is the major issue we face, of course, after the transportation bill passed or right around there, is the MVET forecast going south. This was a huge issue for us. We have never gotten good. One of my continual sources of frustration is the inability to get accurate forecasts for MVET. They have continued to underperform. We budgeted 95% of what the anticipated revenues are. They continue to underperform that. So I would answer two ways. This is a part of our Tier 1 transferway system. We were delighted to get some federal assistance with that, coupled with the underperformance of MVET. It really brought us into the situation we find ourselves in today.
And then,
principally closed.
And then, Mr. Chair, just one final to the slide 13, the potential solutions. And we certainly hope that in the bill coming up, we are able to avoid these cuts so that we can avoid fare increases and service cuts, because we know that we have to be going the other direction. But that other legislative solutions one, I have to tell you, is one I will personally be pursuing with vigor, because I think one of those is a serious look at governance and some projection about governance changes, because frankly, what you've laid out for us in this on these slides is in that bill where we now have split the money between Met Council and a Joint Powers Board, that it sort of confounds sensibilities how that planning will happen. You'll all have to be really good friends to make that division of the dollars work. And so I think that whole issue of how we're going to kind of clean up the governance issues is one that that we all have to sit down and talk about.
Mr. Chair, Representative Houseman, the chairs of all the county boards are my new best friends.
Well, now, Mr. Bell.
Rep. Dan Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of questions. One relates to slide 10, and I support the UPA, so this question isn't to undercut that, but I'm very concerned about the asterisk. Other capital projects will be delayed. Do you have an example of what some of those projects would be?
Mr. Bell?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, the dollars that we are looking at to use, the $38 million, taking four of that for the UPA grant, primarily will be used, it is my understanding, to acquire buses. And the shelf life of a bus is a moving target. So we would be able to, and I think the easiest, quickest answer is delay some on the margin purchases of our buses. That does increase more the operational cost of them, but it would essentially come out of that.
So, Mr. Chair and Chair Bell, so we're not delaying any other transit ways or any corridors then as a result of this, like Southwest, for example.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hornstein, no, there would be no significant delay of any other transit project.
Okay, and then one other question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hornstein.
So I appreciated your forthrightness in mentioning that the FTA does not look kindly on, presumably the kind of cut we're looking at here. And so I'm concerned then that, if the administration proposal happens, which, of course, we're going to fight it and do everything we can to make sure that there's no $30 million cut to transit, but what would be the impact of that in terms of our federal relationship with the feds if a cut like this would happen?
Chair Leader, Representative Hornstein, if in fact the entire cut did go through, and it is my understanding that Commissioner Hansen has indicated before similar committees that this is the governor's proposal, but either inviting the legislature to weigh in and enter into discussions and negotiations with the governor's office on this, we could have up to a 50 cents to a dollar across the board increase in our fare. That would include, let me get you the exact
magnitude.
Thank you. Yes, our a 25 cents to 50 cents across the board increase in our fares. That would include Metro Mobility and the like, as well as significant route reductions as well. We would have to balance our budget. We would be willing to use some reserves in doing that, but not many, and those would only be to the extent to which MBES would come in out years and backfill that. And the FTA likely, if we did this at the same time we are going to them, these increases would take place this fall at the same time we're going to them to be approved to go into final design for the Central Corridor. It could conceivably delay that project.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm also, I have a question on slide 10 on page 5. And members, I certainly understand that Greater Minnesota Transit in the big picture has to bear its share along with Met Transit and Metro Area Transit. But Chair Bell, I'm a little confused, if you would, on the Greater Minnesota Sherburn County for North Star, and there's $900,000. We heard from earlier testifiers, from Mr. Godfrey, about what the effect is on the Greater Minnesota Transit and the governor's budget, and this would look to be $900,000 or maybe another 25,000 hours of service in Greater Minnesota Transit. Chair Belling asked you, would you explain that line, explain where that $900,000 is coming from, and why there would be a transfer from Greater Minnesota Transit to North Star?
Mr. Bell.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrell, that line represents the portion of North Star startup costs that are to be attributed to the part of North Star that is outside of the seven-county area or in Sherburn County. It has been the feeling all along that that should be addressed by Sherburn County, or it has been arguing either by Sherburn County or by that portion of the MVEST fund that is 4%. That's a little bit less than $20 million per year that they would be having from that MVEST allocation when it's fully phased in. And so it has been our feeling all along that that is not something that Metro Transit should pay. Of course, Anoka County and Hennepin County, the other two counties, don't want to take up that portion for Sherburn County, and so that would be left to them to address however they saw fit.
I think Anoka ought
to pay for it. We have more questions.
All right, that's fine.
Okay. We have just Morgan and Earhart, and then we're going to call it. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Bell, you commented upon the impact that these increases in fares and decreases in services might have on the Central Corridor, and that would be a negative impact perhaps. Would it also be a negative impact on the Urban Partnership Agreement?
Mr. Bell?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the short answer is yes. It could have a negative impact on that as well.
Representative Morgan, okay. Representative
Hearn. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the overview here of the budget, when we get to the Met Council's reduction matching Metro sales tax increase, can you give me a little more detail on what we're talking about there?
Mr. Bell.
26.7 or 8 or something.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, I believe that is the one-time reduction that the governor is proposing, the $26.8 million, as well as the 4% across the board.
Well, is that general fund money, Mr. Chairman, or
Mr. Bell?
Chair Leader, Representative Earhart, yes. Both reductions, the across-the-board reduction as well as the one-time reduction, are from our general fund allotment.
Right. Mr. Chairman, how much is the total allotment? And we're going to reduce that by $26.8 million.
The total allotment we get from the general fund, Mr. Chair, Representative Earhart, is $78.8 million.
Okay.
Thank you. Representative Magnus.
Yes, sir.
If you want to temporarily, we can probably hear some more of this tomorrow if you want.
We're pretty much done presenting the bill, Mr. Chairman, whatever your wishes are. I think my understanding was we were just presenting the information in the bill today. Not that we need to take any action or anything.
That's correct.
If you want to just correct. Lay it over another day or whatever your wishes are.
Representative Magnus, if it's okay with you, we'd probably have enough review. Unless you want to feel you should have something further.
I think that's all we have, Mr. Chairman. I think we're done. We're done for the day.
And then, if not, the next meeting is tomorrow at 4 p.m. in room 10. The meeting is adjourned.